Food is Medicine, Autoimmunity and the Role of Food Allergens. The state of chronic disease in 2005 has shown us that chronic disease has been continually increasing. At that point, we had 9 million Americans with coronary disease, 22 million with an active cancer, and that's not including any of the skin cancers. And we had 24 million Americans with an active autoimmune disease, another 50 million with autoantibodies, and we're seeing their physicians. Now, when someone has a autoantibody without a diagnosis, that means there's not yet been enough tissue destruction to make a specific diagnosis. It may take another 5 to 10 years of disease activity before a diagnosis can finally be made. Autoimmune diseases are complex, difficult to diagnose, refractory to treat, and generally progress. The antibodies continue to be made if the exposure to the sensitizing item continues. And there's a great deal of debate over what is it that is the triggering event in autoimmune disease. The general thinking has been that there's a unique combination of someone's DNA and various other environmental factors having to do with their diet, toxin exposures, and infections that develop a complex set of symptoms as the disease progresses and enough tissue destruction occurs. Then the physicians can finally classify that set of symptoms into a disease, which we then have protocols by which we can treat the patient and expect to see either progression or hopefully stabilization of the disease. What I will talk with you today about is the interaction of the various factors that may contribute to chronic disease, and I'll review the role of DNA, micronutrients, allergies, infections, toxic exposures, stress, physical activity. Then I'll summarize some of the things that you can do to lower that factor in terms of driving the fire of continued disease activity. And then I'll, in conclude, give you some summary recommendations on how you can adjust your diet, your nutritional program, to reduce the flames or the fire that's driving the severity of the autoimmune illness. Okay, so the first question had to do with what is the role of DNA and what are the role of micronutrients in the causation and the continuation of autoimmune disease and chronic diseases. This is taken from a study by Dr. Weston Price, who is a dentist that wanted to understand why there is such a severe problem with worsening dental health in his practice. He saw that individuals had increasingly severe malformations of their teeth, or rather crooked alignment, lots of cavities. And he assembled a multidisciplinary team of dentists, physicians, mental health professionals, nutritionists, anthropologists, that he took around the world to examine 14 different indigenous peoples, ranging from the Alaskans to Africans, Aborigines, South America, Asia, and people in the remote Swiss Alps. They did careful physical assessments, mental assessments, dental assessments, pictures, x-rays, and analyzed the results by a careful history of what it was individuals were consuming for their regular diet, and then analyzed it by those who were still eating a primitive or indigenous diet, those who had in their first generation switched to a westernized diet and those who were born to a second generation of westernized diet. And he had in his samples a combination of primitive individuals and those who had a married into a westernized member of the family. They also did a nutritional analysis of the food and analysis of soil samples. What they found first was people were eating quite different foodstuffs depending on where they were from. The Western diets were all really quite similar in that it was high in meat, relatively high in fat, and very high in grain and sugar. We did not generally eat enough vitamins and minerals to meet basic nutritional requirements, nor was there enough omega-3 fatty acids. The teeth were uniformly crooked and highly carious, that is, filled with cavities, and chronic disease, that is, high blood pressure, diabetes, and arthritis, was quite common. The indigenous diet, there was a much higher intake of vitamins and minerals and a higher intake of omega-3 fatty acids. That was consistent regardless of the foodstuff. So individuals had in their societies enough collective wisdom to understand how to create a diet that met the nutritional needs. Teeth were straight. There was no caries. Chronic disease was rare. Essentially no diabetes, high blood pressure, arthritis. And they had superior physical fitness, agility, and mental fitness. The first generation Western diet had decline. The second generation diet had more serious decline, and their teeth looked very much like the teeth of the children in Dr. Price's practice. His conclusions then were that micronutrient deficiency contributes to deterioration of the species. He predicted that the primitive people's health would rapidly decline as a result of the worsening nutritional status. He also predicted that there would be a steady decline in the health of westernized societies because of poor nutrition. And, of course, that has, in fact, come to pass. Now, notably, his study was done in the 1930s, and it would be difficult to replicate today because most of these primitive societies have been thoroughly westernized, and it would be difficult to find societies that were still largely following the primitive diets. Brings me to the term called epigenetics. We now realize that genes will turn off and turn on in response to micronutrients and toxins. And we know that diets high in grains and carbohydrates will turn on 65 genes that will increase inflammation, and a diet low in grain and carbohydrates will turn on 75 genes that lower inflammation. And so with the same DNA can produce healthy, vigorous adult, or with manipulation of diet and toxins, can produce chronic disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, arthritis, autoimmune illness. It's not just the DNA. The quick refresher, the standard American diet, very high in fat, salt, sugar, high in meat, high in dairy. It has relatively few foodstuffs, very few green leaves, vegetables, and fruit. So one of the first things one can do to lower the symptoms and severity of autoimmune illness is to increase the micronutrient intake. You'll see this over and over as I talk. My general recommendation is 9 cups of fruits and vegetables, 6 for women, 3 cups of greens, sulfur-containing foods, things like cabbage, onions, sulfur family of vegetables, 3 cups of bright colors, 3 cups of other non-starchy fruits and vegetables, have nutritional yeast and kelp daily, and a source of omega-3 fatty acids. And that would include fish, krill, omega-3 rich eggs, hemp and flax. And 9 cups of fruits and vegetables is not nearly as hard as you think. A plate covered with greens is 3 cups. Carrying some fruit and vegetables to have on during the day will be helpful. But we'll talk more as the lecture goes on. Vitamin D deficiency is also very, very common in autoimmune problems. And it's also become very common here in America. To make vitamin D, you need to have UV light exposed to your skin. We spend so much more time indoors. And myself and my other physician colleagues have convinced our patients that they need to wear sunscreen to lower the risk of skin cancer. Unfortunately, the result is rampant D deficiency. The majority of our folks over 65 are D deficient. In the studies of medical students and young physicians, they're D deficient. In studies of our adolescents, they're often D deficient as well. Now, if you are D deficient, it markedly increases the risk of autoimmune diagnoses, cancers, including skin cancer, mental health diagnoses, mood disorders, learning disorders, osteoporosis. And again, vitamin D deficiency is very, very common. Anyone who has an autoimmune illness, mental health issues, malignancy, my strong advice is to request a vitamin D level, and that you would preferably like to have your vitamin D in the upper half of the normal range. If you're here in Iowa, that would mean that you'll need to take a vitamin D supplement certainly during the winter, anytime from October through April. And if you are not getting at least 30 minutes of sun every day, then I would take vitamin D year-round. So we're moving on to the impact of allergies on chronic disease and autoimmunity. Food allergies. So 50,000 years ago, we ate hundreds, perhaps thousands of plants. So we had a wide variety of our foodstuffs. And we'd eat the fish, fowl, and meat that we could catch. We were probably eating mushrooms and occasional eggs. Notably absent from our diet was dairy, grain, and sugar. And a quick reminder, the standard American diet, very high in fat, salt, sugar. We have lots of meat, lots of dairy, and lots of wheat. Now, celiac disease has gliadin antibodies, and that is an antibody against gluten. Some of the molecules found in wheat, rye, or barley. And the eventually, with chronic exposure to the food to which we are allergic, the body begins to make antibodies, sometimes to small bowel, that results in, you can imagine the skin contact dermatitis that develops when you have poison ivy overlying the skin to get red, blistery, weepy, oozy. That's what's going on in the gut when you have chronic congestion of food to which you are allergic. That can lead to diarrhea, weight loss, iron deficiency. Often in these individuals, there's an antibody against the bone as well, leading to severe osteoporosis. And it's not at all uncommon to have psychological and mental health issues as well. Again, when suffering from gluten sensitivity, the symptoms are not just in the gut. There can be issues with the brain, with joints, skin rashes, eczema, and also very commonly there are antibodies against the thyroid as well. We now believe that only 1 in 10 are diagnosed. The treatment is a gluten-free diet. That means no wheat, rye, or barley. It also means reading the labels very, very carefully because it is often added in processed foods. If you follow a gluten-free diet, that 70% will have complete resolution of the symptoms. However, 30% will continue to have symptoms, and we now realize that that's because they are allergic to more than just gluten. The most frequent other food sensitivities that have developed, because the longer you eat gluten when you're allergic, gradually over time, people are much more likely to develop additional food allergies. So that, in sequence, it often will go gluten allergy, milk allergy, then egg allergy, then peanuts and other legumes, and sometimes yeast allergies as well. And we know that foods and food sensitivity have been documented to worsen the following conditions: depression, headaches, fatigue, arthritis, osteoporosis, obesity, skin rashes, and asthma. And gluten sensitivity has been associated with autoimmune thyroid disease, acne, asthma, eczema, arthritis, irritable bowel, and osteoporosis. The Department of Defense has the opportunity to do a very interesting assessment of what are the autoantibodies associated with autoimmunity, because they follow soldiers over 20, 30 years at times. And they went back in time, looked at the serial blood samples on soldiers that had later had a diagnosis of some type of autoimmune disease. And they asked the question, when did antibodies develop against one's own structures, that is autoantibodies, and did they ever have an anti-gliadin antibody, which is a marker of gluten sensitivity? So they found that the earliest antibody was the gliadin antibody, and with each decade, more autoantibodies were detected. So let me repeat that. The Department of Defense noted that in their look back on soldiers who had had an autoimmune diagnosis, many of them had, over years, developed more and more antibodies against various tissues in their body. And the earliest antibody that they found was one against wheat. That would suggest that gluten sensitivity may be a factor that contributes to development of antibodies against the self and may be a factor in driving continued activity of an autoimmune disorder. Okay, let me talk now about the role of infections in autoimmunity. Bacteria in the gut are necessary for our health. Since our species was around, we've developed a symbiotic or a cooperative relationship with that bacteria. The bacteria digest and process the food that we eat through our gut. As they excrete byproducts, we have learned how to utilize those byproducts into compounds that are very helpful to our health. And we have learned how to neutralize the compounds that are not helpful to our health. When we have changed our diet away from the diet our ancestors of 50,000 years ago, that changes which bacteria can dominate in the gut. So we no longer have the same kind of bacteria living in our gut that our ancestors would have had 50,000 years ago. Now, the result is that begins to change our health status. In people who have inflammatory bowel disease, we have noticed that there's been a lower number of a kind of bacterial species called bifidobacteria that increases the severity of symptoms in those who have inflammatory bowel disease and irritable bowel syndrome. Is that a coincidence? Perhaps. Or perhaps the shift in the gut flora has really affected the health of the cells lining our gut. Remember, the Paleolithic diet, high in green leaves, roots, fruits, fish, fowl, and meat, no grain, no sugars. And they had very different gut bacteria than the bacteria that you and I have. And these new gut bacteria can make byproducts which are sometimes toxic and can worsen inflammatory conditions. The term for those kinds of things are dysbiosis. They may not cause an infection. They're simply living there, happily digesting the food that we eat. But the byproducts can exacerbate inflammatory conditions. Proteus, which is in the GI or the GU tract, that is in the gut or in the bladder, prostate, can worsen rheumatoid arthritis symptoms in 40% of those who have rheumatoid arthritis. Therefore, even if you are not gluten sensitive and you have an autoimmune condition, it may be beneficial to eliminate grains in your diet to shift the gut bacteria back to the gut bacteria that our ancient forefathers and foremothers used to have. We want to get back to the bacteria that our species has long since learned to coexist with happily. Toxic exposures. Okay. We have every year more toxins introduced into our environment that we have to deal with. We have bromine that's in our food, in our oils, in our breads, in the soda. Chlorine and bromine are in hot tubs and pools. Fluoride is in the water. Heavy metals have gotten into the food chain and in the water supplies. Perfumes and tattoos we put on our skin or inject into our skin. Herbicides, insecticides, pesticides are in our food chain, and they're often in the indoor area because of cleaning, because of protecting upholsteries, because of managing pests. And all of those toxins have to be processed, metabolized, and then removed from the body to prevent toxic buildup. And while each one of those toxins, compound by compound, are tested for safety, the truth is that we're exposed to hundreds, perhaps thousands of toxins at very small levels, and they can have an additive, if not synergistic, effect that is harmful to our health. Iodine is a molecule that is particularly important in removing toxins. It's important in hormone metabolism. The North American soil is iodine deficient, and I, for years, like most physicians, have been telling my patients to use less table salt, so there's less use of iodized table salt. In the 1980s, there was a switch from iodine to bromine for a food preservative, and when we fluoridated the water, fluoride competes with iodine in the body. All this adds up to 70% of Americans have insufficient iodine intake. Most of us are iodine deficient. Now, the consequence of iodine deficiency makes us more likely to be infertile, more likely to be hypothyroid, have mental health problems, lowers the IQ, and increases the burden of heavy metal intoxication. And any of you who have silver in your mouth, there's a combination of mercury in those fillings materials, so you have a low level of mercury coming into your body every day. Iodine sources are kelp, seaweed, seafood. You can use kelp granules, use it like table salt. Iodized sea salt, and just plain iodized salt. The advantage of sea salt, it also includes the numerous other trace minerals which are required for health, which are difficult to get because conventional farming depletes the mineral content of American soils. Minimize toxin exposures. Buy local, think that foreign laws are likely more lax, and think about milk and bovine growth hormone, which another hormone which would have to be metabolized. And in your meat, growth hormones are often used. Food, wash, grow organic if you can. Grow your own. Green leaves are particularly easy to grow for the gardener. And, of course, minimize indoor chemicals where you can. you want to improve toxin removal. Sweat is actually the most effective way to remove, or I should say one of the very effective means we have at removing toxins. It's one of the reasons why saunas, particularly a dry infrared sauna, can be helpful at removing toxins. Hydration, drinking lots of water. And then finally, improve the health of your mitochondria, because it's the mitochondria that has to do the work of removing these toxins, altering the molecules so they can be excreted either in the urine or in the bile. So a quick review of nutrients for the mitochondria. To make the energy to do all of the work, you need lots of B vitamins, and in particular it's niacinamide, riboflavin, and something called coenzyme Q, which is very similar to a B vitamin. And to dispose of the free radicals, because every chemical plant, including mitochondria, have toxic trash at the end. The toxic trash is called free radicals, which will hurt the mitochondria and the cell if it's not removed. So the body will use lots of antioxidants to get rid of those. Food sources for these important nutrients. For the B vitamins, think dark green leaves, mushrooms, nuts, seeds, and organ meats. For the antioxidants, think bright, bright colors, the polyphenols. Other important mitochondrial nutrients, I'll mention carnitine, present in rare red meat and game meat, lipoic acid, back to bright greens, yeast, mushrooms, and organ meat. Organic sulfur, very helpful for the mitochondria. That's cabbage family, onion family, mushrooms. Resveratrol, think blue-black. Black grape juice, blueberries, raspberries, elderberries, mulberries. And the antioxidants, deeply colored fruits and vegetables. Your beets, berries, watermelon, peaches, squash. Okay, stress and autoimmune disease, chronic disease. Stress is the fight-or-flight response. What makes something stressful? It needs to be novel. It needs to be unpredictable. And you must have a sense of no control. That leads to a chronic elevation of the cortisol and a chronic elevation of epinephrine, norepinephrine. If you live under chronic hypercortisol states, you're much more likely to have depression, chronic inflammation, central obesity, is a fat belly, diabetes, high blood pressure, and then eventually autoimmune diseases and other chronic diseases. Okay, so what can we do to lower our cortisol and our stress levels? One is improve our magnesium levels. You can do that with Epsom salts soak in the bathtub or a foot soak, because you can absorb the Epsom salts through the skin. Chlorophyll is a wonderful source of magnesium, and that's because the central ion in chlorophyll is magnesium, much like iron is central to hemoglobin. Quiet time in the form of prayer, meditation, that hot soak in the bathtub by candlelight, a walk in nature, all of that will lower cortisol levels and lower inflammatory molecules. Other things that can do that, journaling, writing about the stressful circumstances in your life, 15 minutes a day, have been shown to lower cortisol. Physical activity, even low levels, can be helpful to that end. A step counter it can help you find ways to incorporate some level of physical activity in your day. And more recently, something called iMusic, which is a reformatted music that induces alpha waves. When you listen to it, it feels like there's a little bit of distortion in it, but this has been reformulated to induce alpha waves. and it does lower the cortisol and stress level in a number of studies. Okay, physical activity in autoimmune chronic disease. Once again, physical activity will help lower the inflammation molecules. Simple things like taking a walk, step counters, regular training is helpful. If you train to the extreme levels, such as one may do for marathoning, ultramarathons, then you could sort of in a U-shaped curve where the health benefits begin to reduce. Okay, so if you have an autoimmune chronic disease, where do I begin? What do I do? I've just quickly walked through the multitude of options, and we'll summarize some of the next steps here. The first thing I tell my patients, and I tell all of you, is that, remember, this is a journey. While one can make all these steps in one fell swoop, it is likely to be more successful if you do things incrementally. And you absolutely need to discuss these concepts, these ideas, with your physician, who can help interpret what might be helpful for you and how these recommendations, these concepts, would have to be modified for you. Because you may have health circumstances that are quite a bit different from that may require modification of these recommendations. And it could mean that some of these recommendations would have the potential to be harmful. For example, if you're on Coumadin, eating a lot of green leaves will impact how much Coumadin is required. So, coming back, what do you do? First, fix the micronutrient deficiency. How do you do that? Well, I tell folks, work on 9 cups of fruits and vegetables. If you're a female, maybe 6 cups would be appropriate. You want to stress green leaves, then you want to stress bright colors. Have some source of nutritional yeast and kelp daily to see to it you have enough B vitamins, minerals, and iodine. And you want a source of omega-3 fatty acids. I also suggest minimizing the grains. So, 9 cups fruits and vegetables, 3 cups of greens and sulfur, 3 of color, 3 more of your choice, nutritional yeast, kelp daily, omega-3 fatty acids. Then consider whether or not you might have food allergies. Okay, so how do I know if I'm allergic? Well, one way is food sensitivity blood test. Now, that can be done. The challenge is that there's a potential for false negatives. It would, if it shows that you have sensitivity to a food, you would know to at least stay away from that food. You'd also be told to follow a food and symptom diary where you record everything that you eat, including the spices, and rate your symptoms of energy, pain, plus whatever other symptoms you wish to track on a scale of 1 to 4. Realize they can take up to 72 hours to notice symptoms. It takes a lot of patience and a lot of persistence to stay with this. But in the end, it's the only way to know what are all the potential foods to which you're allergic. So in summary, the elimination diet that would have people avoid the most common offenders, gluten, milk, eggs, and peanuts. Keep a food symptom diary. I'd want them to add kelp for some trace minerals and nutritional yeast, possibly, or if not taking nutritional yeast, to take a B-complex and a multi-mineral. Maximize the greens and colors. Rotate fish, fowl, and grass-fed. And then rotate which foodstuffs are eaten each day so you don't eat something any more frequently than once every 5 days. And it's a chore. But if you have a severe autoimmune illness, this is the one way you can help slowly begin to unravel, are there foods that are adding to the severity of the illness. And then there's the unfriendly gut bacteria. If you remember, the high carbohydrate diet changes the gut bacteria, increases the likelihood that you have bacteria that your species does not know how to live with. That we have unfriendly bacteria that may produce toxins as part of their byproducts that we do not have a good method of detoxifying. Therefore, even if you are not gluten sensitive, if you have an autoimmune condition, a condition with a lot of inflammation, it may be very beneficial to eliminate the grains, get rid of the high carb diet, eat greens, colors, and your source of protein, simply to shift the gut bacteria back to the bacteria to which our species is most familiar. Toxins. Remember, we have lots more issues with toxins in our environment. And we know that the majority of Americans are probably iodine insufficient. So think about how to improve your iodine intake. That's seaweed, iodized sea salt, kelp, some of your best sources. Think about how to reduce your exposures and support mitochondrial health. And of course, the mitochondrial health, that's all about ensuring adequate B vitamins, lots of greens, mushrooms, and lots of bright colors. Potentially helpful vitamins and supplements. First, remember to talk to your doctor before starting a new diet, vitamin, or supplements. The vitamin D, 2,000 international units every day, and get your vitamin D level checked. Because if you're vitamin D deficient, 2,000 international units may not be sufficient to get you back into the upper range, back into the normal levels. A multivitamin, multimineral, a high-potency B-complex vitamin, omega-3 in the form of fish oil, krill oil, or high-dose hemp oil, flax oil, coenzyme Q, and probiotics. There may be benefit, but always, always talk to your physicians before starting a new diet or any of these supplements, even the vitamins. The other caveat I'd remind everyone is that many of our vitamins, supplements, are now manufactured in China. And if you don't remember, think about the milk powder scandal in China and the deaths associated with melamine. If you're taking vitamins and supplements, there's a definite hazard. Be cautious. I think it's always better to get this through food. Okay, so summary. Autoimmunity is increasing with every generation. Your children now have a 1 in 3 chance of having diabetes or a serious autoimmune illness. Inflammation is a factor in most chronic diseases. Toxins, heavy metals, worsen inflammation. Gluten sensitivity may occur decades before an autoimmune diagnosis. Unfriendly gut bacteria can worsen inflammation. And grains increase the risk of having unfriendly gut bacteria. My food recommendations: minimize grains. Have 9 cups of fruits and vegetables. You want 3 greens, 3 colors, 3 other non-starchy of your choice. Nutritional yeast and kelp. And for your essential fatty acids, eat nuts, fish, grass-fed meat. And if you can't consume 9 cups of fruits and vegetables in a day, don't worry about it. Just eat greens, colors, and your protein sources. For more information, you can go to my website, www.terrywalls.com. I have a book there, Minding My Mitochondria, which talks more about some of the science behind these concepts and has 40 recipes to get you started. The Institute for Functional Medicine is a scientific organization training health professionals. It also has information for the public and a reference guide that could help you find a provider that thinks along these kinds of lines in terms of how we can better treat chronic disease. Some of the books that I think can also be helpful, The Anti-Inflammation Diet, Gluten-Free Gourmet, and The World's Healthiest Diet.